Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Podcast that still exists in the universe where the hip drop tackle is illegal. Well, at least we wish we did. NFL news rolling through in the offseason, and former Cowboys running back Tony Pollard became kind of one of the faces of this new rule change, which I wrote on Tuesday. So the writer's block was all over as far as discussing what this is going to mean for the impact on the game. I don't think you have to rack your mind too hard to understand that most fans are against this, myself as well. Sean Martin with you here. You can find me on X at Sean Martin NFL, and here on Hidden Yardage, as always, I'm joined by Jess Haney. You can find at Cowboys Addicts. So yeah, we might see even more 15-yard penalties that help the offense, and we're about to talk pretty in depth about what the Cowboys offense are looking like, what the defense are looking like as well, because I think we've dissected and torn apart this whole Jerry Jones all in, but what does it really mean? And is it a rebuild, which is becoming more and more mainstream, which is kind of fun to see as the offseason rolls on and the Cowboys have continued to sit on their hands. So with just under a month now until the draft, we're really staring at the railroad tracks of this roster and this team being pretty set until the draft. Certainly that's surprising in some ways. It's also not surprising and disappointing, but they haven't exactly stuck to how they try to go into the draft in recent years, which is well understood. Use the second and third waves of free agency to at least try to fill some roster needs, give you the guys that make you say, okay, we don't need to come away from the draft with a starter here or there, and then draft with more of that, you know, quote-unquote best player available approach, get after it, and go try to find some starters. So what we're talking about today is the Mike McCarthy era as a whole when it comes to now what they're facing in this year's draft. Is there, what Jess and I are going to try to dig into, is there a precedent for, okay, left tackle and center are going to be your most obvious needs of teams going into the draft. There's a whole bunch of other ones we'll get into. So how many starters do they need to come away with in this year's draft? And have they ever been able to do so under McCarthy? And then also with Eric Kendricks only standing as basically the only outside free agent signing, is there a McCarthy offseason where we can say the same about the seemingly almost zero impact you get from an outside free agent class, and that's still leading to 12 wins? And I know we also talked, I think last week, about, you know, miss me with the how many games you win in the division and the t-shirts and caps give them someone else when you do win that division, but it is still important to, you know, stay ahead of other teams in the NFC East. I see all the doom and gloom all offseason since it started from Cowboys fans, and you know, I talked to a lot of fans from other teams. I did a podcast with a friend in my home state where we talked to a lot of Giants and Jets, and I just think Cowboys fans in some ways do miss the some of the consistency that this team has found on the field. You know, we can beat the drum of, what, I don't do this like other teams, I don't do that like other teams. Okay, you know what a lot of other teams around the league don't do? You know, consistently win 12 games like they found a way to do under Mike McCarthy. The cards are seemingly stacked against him and trying to do so this year, so that's why we're kind of turning back the clock to see if we can figure out exactly what's going on compared to past off season. So, Jess, this is quite the trip down memory lane we have planned. You ready for it?
It might not be pretty, but yeah, I'm ready. It's interesting the ways that these off seasons have gone in the past, compared to the results, like you said. I don't know that we've come away from many off seasons jumping for joy. And yet, like you said, the Cowboys have consistently won 12 games when Dak Prescott's been healthy. They probably would have won at least 10 games in 2020 if he hadn't gotten injured. So there isn't necessarily a correlation to these off season results and regular season results. But what about playoff results? And I think that's the other big factor here is, are the Cowboys building a contender or are they just building a regular season bully in these off seasons?
Yeah, the six games in 2020 is, you know, where we're going to start as far as looking at free agent signings. And it's interesting thinking about how if ever there was an off season where, you know, your number one priority that you should have advertised to the world is not only get the guys that can be regular season bullies, like you say, but be the type of guy that can get you playoff wins. If ever there was a time to try to focus on that, of course it would have been this offseason, but it's really shaping up to be McCarthy's slowest in the contract year, and that's why all signs point towards rebuild, essentially. But in this 2020 class we're about to get into, I mean, this might unfortunately be the list that has the most recognizable names where you can say, okay, maybe there's some playoff experience, if that matters to you, sprinkled in throughout. But a lot of those guys that you recognize barely even made the roster, and when they did, weren't contributing. So it'd be interesting to consider maybe that is what scared the Cowboys away from some of that top-tier free agency, even though they didn't sign quite top-tier guys, but scared them away from the big names that didn't work out. And we'll see how that affected the 21 class. And, you know, down the line we go until you devalue free agency all the way to the point of only having Eric Kendricks on the board here late in March going into April, which is certainly a decision to make when you're a team that lost in the wild card round.
Yeah, I do think that we don't want to underestimate also the re-signing of Jordan Lewis. That was, you know, important because, and we just had a sound clip from Stephen Jones here from the NFL's meeting where he basically ruled out the idea that Stephon Gilmore is coming back, and the signing of Lewis was on the basis for that. He pretty much said the Cowboys had their top three with Diggs, Blaine, and Lewis, without saying it officially. But it was pretty obvious in his mind they've moved on from Gilmore. So bringing Lewis back was, you know, and I've said this before, that third cornerback position is a starting role on the team. So bringing back Lewis in their mind filled out their top three. Bring, you know, they added Kendricks, but beyond that, it's been Rico Dowdle, your long snapper, and, you know, our annual 1 year contract for CJ Goodwin. That's it. So it's really been they're saying a lot without saying a lot right now. their activity is really starting to tell the story about where they're at with this team, where they're at with their confidence in Mike McCarthy. And then, you know, not to put on the tinfoil hat, but where they're at with Dak Prescott is now also becoming the question, with not doing anything with his contract, choosing to leave his contract untouched and limit your free agent activity. If this continues much longer, it really does look like this may be it for him too.
When we do get to talking about this current roster and going into this 24 draft, some recent comments by Jerry told us that, of course, the working point at left tackle is Tyler Smith right now. I don't see why there was such a big reaction to that. I mean, that's just basically Jerry saying that when they're in the war room and you have the depth chart next to you, next to all your tags, you know, you look at, well, if we don't draft this guy, who's going to be currently on the roster that's starting? And of course, it's going to be Tyler Smith. I mean,
right.
He might get – I wouldn't say he would get beaten out. He might see a guy like a Waletzko or see Richard or Ball. You might see one of them serve well enough where you can always have the thought that, okay, maybe we can keep Tyler Smith at guard, but he's still a better tackle than anything you have right now out there. So, of course, that's going to be how the depth chart looks before you consider drafting a tackle. And then on the other side of the ball, as far as defending the run, he also said that he sees the team already being improved there, even though they lost Jonathan Hankins, and a wave of defensive ends to the Commanders who followed Dan Quinn. You mentioned the yearly annual tradition of re-signing CJ Goodwin. How about the yearly tradition, and it might continue in the draft, of, you know, trying to bank on an injured guy in the offseason, and that's where we are with DeMarvian Overson, which, of course, unfortunately, tore his ACL in the preseason. So didn't get to see what he could have done under Quinn, although there was some hype there, and now it seems like that hype is going to do nothing but continue under Mike Zimmer, as he's going to be a linebacker that they count on right next to Eric Kendricks to actually try to help this team defend and run better.
Yeah, I mean, and in those comments I was mentioning earlier from Stephen Jones, he did the same thing with Diggs, saying like, hey, here's a guy that it's almost like adding a free agent because he only played two games last year. Overshown didn't play any games last year.
You can hear the sound of my eyes rolling.
I know. And in a sense, like, you know, adding Kendricks because, Vander Esch only played, what, five or six games last year, I think, at the most. So adding Kendricks is, in a way, more than just replacing Vander Esch. He's an addition because we didn't have Vander Esch most of last year. So there are a few things like that that are positives. But, I mean, Diggs coming off of an ACL injury, how good is he going to be? Is he going to be that much better than Gilmore was last year? Probably not. Is Overshown going to be a huge upgrade in his first year over Marquise Bell? I don't know that we can say that for sure. He'll be bigger, and that might help with stopping the run. I don't know that overall, especially coverage, things like that, his play is going to be superior. So it's tough to say. At the very least, when it comes to those injured guys, their injuries happened early in the year. So they will have had, you know, mostly a full year, in Overshown's case, definitely a full year to recover, which is, you know, gives us better hope for their prospects than some of the things we've dealt with lately, like where Tony Pollard and Steele, these guys had late season injuries and surgeries, and, you know, it took time in the season for them to really get back. Steele really never did last year. Pollard started looking more like his old self toward the end of the year. So that's the part that at least is a little comforting, is that Diggs, Overshown, they've had time to heal.
And they've set themselves up on the offensive line where Steele's going to be, you know, this is probably his most important year as far as counting on him to be in that, you know, anchor group, if you will, as far as guys that we don't have to worry about again. He has played like that before, and they're hoping to regain that form. With Steele, you know, he's never been at the level of Zach Martin or Tyron Smith, but I'm saying in the sense of, you know, you don't worry about them as much, and you know that those are your guys that can cover up for deficiencies elsewhere. You know, it's not quite going to be the case where, and if you go into a draft where you need both a left tackle and a center. So with that, let's jump in the time machine. Let's talk 2020 Cowboys free agent signing. It was Mike McCarthy's first year. It was the COVID year. It was new defensive coordinator Mike Nolan, who we are both not a fan of, and, you know, finally a Cowboys fan that was. So that led to struggles on that side of the ball, of course, trying to install a new defense in the offseason over Zoom. And the free agency class, I mean, man, this is a doozy, Jess, and you said it before the show, and obviously we're going to talk all the other years too, but this one is quite interesting, just to run through the names. And I'm only really talking external guys. You know, we'd be here all day if we also added the guys the Cowboys re-signed and all that, but external names the Cowboys brought in for Mike McCarthy's first year: quarterback Andy Dalton, defensive end Everson Griffin on a one-year deal. He was cut after seven games. Cam Irving on a one-year deal, injured, and that's what opened the door for Terrence Steele, who's now a guy the Cowboys depend on. Cornerback Daryl Worley, also a one-year deal. And that one was interesting because it was almost finally that type of move where it's like, all right, okay, Cowboys, you're not just getting guys that you know, can fill an immediate potential starting need. They had rookie Trayvon Diggs, who ended up, you know, drafting Diggs, but you had Anthony Brown, Tadobia Awuzie. So you actually had some solid depth at corner, and then you still felt like you added to it in free agency. So that was interesting, but he was still released after seven games because it turns out when he actually had to see the field, teams just threw at him all the time, and it was not pretty and did not go well. Also, cornerback Savion Smith, he was on a two-year deal, but it was his third team in 3 years. He ended up bouncing around up until the 2021 season. Hasn't been in the league since. Defensive end Alden Smith on a one-year deal. Ended up being his last in the NFL, reinstated from suspension. But he was second on the team in sacks that year with five. So that says much more about the overall talent and scheme ability of Mike Nolan's defense than what they really got out of Alden Smith. But he had some flash plays and became that perfect Cowboys, you know, big name, but high risk free agent signing who actually did contribute to a team that was a dead end type of team. Defensive tackle Don Terry Poe, there was your big, at least attempt to sign a run stuff in defensive tackle, but it was Don Terry Poe well past his expiration date. Probably the clearest example on this list of, you know, player that just couldn't help this team anymore. And even though he was on a 2-year deal, he was also cut after seven games. Kicker Greg Zuerlein played out two of the three seasons on his deal and was inconsistent throughout most of it. tight end Blake Bell was added on a one-year deal. Former Green Bay Packer under Mike McCarthy, Clinton Dix, his safety was added on a one-year deal but released before the start of the regular season. And then, of course, they tried with veteran defensive tackle Gerald McCoy on a three-year deal. There was another name but risk signing, and his injury happened in the offseason and was released in August before ever actually making it to a game with this team. So quite the doozy of a list there to start the Mike McCarthy era off.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned the few things that worked. Aldon Smith worked to a point. I mean, it was such a bad, and that's the hard part too, is 2020 was such a bad year just across the board. Some of these guys, who knows what they could have done if they joined the team the last 3 years. But 2020 was a mess with the pandemic, with Mike Nolan not being really good at his job. Then, of course, Dak Prescott's injury after a few games, that really just sent everything into a tailspin. Probably the most important signing they had in that offseason proved to be Andy Dalton because of that Prescott injury. But then, you know, Smith, he came in, he did some good things. The McCoy signing and injury, that was just sad. And I mean, but they knew it was risky because if you remember, he had that clause in his contract that if he suffered the exact injury he suffered, with the quad, that it would give the Cowboys huge relief on his deal. So the level of risk in that signing was well known going into the fact that that specific language was in the deal. They were throwing a lot of money around to fill holes, because there was a little bit of a transition in defensive scheme that was supposed to be happening with Nolan, that they were going to start implementing some 3-4 philosophies into the scheme. They needed a true nose tackle, which is what the Poe signing was about. So there was, that was the reason that you had a lot of name guys who had experience playing certain styles of defense. It's hard to evaluate anything that happened that offseason because the regular season ended up being such a mess, and COVID was a huge factor that year too.
So certainly this set an example, just like we're going into with this year's draft, where the Cowboys needed to hit on many of their picks in their 2020 draft class, did just that. Of course, CeeDee Lamb started off in the first round, then Trayvon Diggs, Neville Gallimore, who left this offseason for the Dolphins. He was your third round pick. In the fourth round, you took a cornerback out of Tulsa, Reggie Robertson, who was moved to safety, but only made it through one season and obviously didn't contribute much until being waived. So that experiment, moving him to safety, a position group the Cowboys have struggled to find outside or draft talent in, did not work out. Prior to bringing in Dan Quinn, Tyler Biadasz, who got away to Dan Quinn and the Commanders this offseason, you found your starting center long-term here in this 2020 draft. And then Bradley Anae, who many fans are hyped about as far as the tape on Utah, had all the tools of the defensive end but never put it together. And then Ben DiNucci was, of course, a backup quarterback here that you never wanted to see on the field. But yes, that goes to a lot of backups, but he might have been the most extreme case in really the whole league. So I remember during his time, an NFL.com article that took on the challenge of ranking not only the starting quarterbacks in every league in the league, but all of the quarterbacks. So, it was like the starters basically 1 through 32, unless you really feel like a backup was better than any current one. And then it got into the backups, and Ben DiNucci was dead last on that list because all we had to go off of at that point was that one start against the Eagles. It was a Sunday night. They didn't score a touchdown the whole game, and then we never saw him again. So it's like, that probably puts you in the last, and that was your last pick in that 2020 class. But the good news in this class, you found four starters, which is maybe close to, when we get to talking about this year's team, how many you need to find. So, you found four starters despite the free agency class being a struggle, and that sort of set you up for the team to be better. But like you said, too many outside weird things to overcome between COVID, new head coach, new defensive coordinator, and the fact that these free agents just didn't work out, but got to stay on the field probably longer than they would have in another year because you didn't get to see them in the offseason work and like you would and things like that. So guys like Poe and Griffin, you know, they got those seven games as opposed to letting some of these younger guys get on the field right away, but the draft class really did make up for a lot that year.
You come away from a draft with just Lamb and Diggs, and you're probably happy. And then to get Gallimore, to get 4 years out of Gallimore as both a sometimes starter and rotation player on the line, not bad. Not a great return for a third-round pick. You'd like that guy to be a second contract guy, you know, but not terrible, especially with transitions and defensive coordinator during the time he's been here. Obviously getting Biotish as a four-year starter at center in the fourth round, that was a good deal. And that poor guy, just because he went to Wisconsin, everybody acted like, oh, he's the next Travis Frederick. Like, no. Like, so he...
Right. See, everybody acting that Drake May is the next Mitch Trubisky.
Right. So, you know, Biotish was kind of given these unfair expectations right out of the box. For where he was taken in the draft, for where he was rated as a prospect, he did great. He's been a very solid NFL player. It is also worth noting in 2020 that Dallas did not have a sixth-round pick because they traded it the year before to Miami for defensive end Robert Quinn. And that was actually a really good deal that year because I think Quinn had 11 or 12 sacks in 2019. So that is something to think about, too, when you're evaluating this stuff. There may be a pick that you didn't have because the year before you traded it away, and depending on what you got for that, and I would say that in this case, this was a time, you know, like they've done with some of their recent trades for guys like Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks, the Cowboys won on those trades with those late round picks, getting a veteran who really did help them.
It's interesting following the position group flow of some of these things now, you know, having 1 year that we've looked at and about to move on to 2021, it's of course started what we'll call the Dan Quinn era, and we all know what came with that as far as, you know, hashtag Quinn guys and him bringing in scheme fits and former players he worked with throughout the years in Atlanta and before that, and how that continued in not just 21, but all the way up until last offseason while he was still here. But the position group flow as far as, you know, yes, we want to get on this team and fault them for being so draft dependent because we want more things to talk about in the offseason, and we want them to live up to the words, Stephen's words, that is, of, you know, player acquisition being 365, and we can improve this team year-round and not just in the draft. But, you know, here they are signing corners and defensive tackles, which are always positions to look at, especially on this roster. We've been talking about, even since the Jason Garrett era, you know, positions of need, corners of perpetual need for all 32 teams every offseason. And defensive tackle, for as long as they've been watching this team, is a group that they just never seem to get right. But here we are talking about the fact that they at least threw multiple darts in free agency. Those didn't work, but what did work were the draft picks. Not a cornerback in the 2022 class beyond Diggs, but you know, you found a guy in Gallimore and then you did find Diggs, so you certainly did better in the draft than you did free agency addressing your positions of need, and that's why that trend has continued. Looking at the 2021 free agent class now, like I said, this is stamped all over the place by Quinn guys, but some other names as well, of course, on offense, too. They signed Malik Hooker to a one-year deal. Cornerback Kyron Brown was on a two-year deal. Tight end Jeremy Sprinkle, he actually came up in that podcast appearance I did with my friend, talking Jets and Giants. Me and him go back covering drafts together, and he was in the class that we covered the closest, and we both were a fan of his out of Arkansas, so that was interesting. But Jeremy Sprinkle never played more than 35% of the team's snaps in any given game because that ended up being a breakout year for Dalton Schultz. DeMonte Casey was on a one-year deal. Javon Kearse came in. Keanu Neal was a safety that came in, got moved to linebacker, and that was a one-year experiment with the Quinn small linebacker thing. And kind of worked. I mean, he made some flash plays, but obviously wasn't a high-level starter at a new position in his only year with the Cowboys. Defensive tackle Brent Urban was another try at the run stuffing, one technique position, but he unfortunately got hurt and placed on IR after five games. Defensive end Terrell Basson was on a two-year deal and actually started six games that first year and had three and a half sacks as a veteran defensive end. And then Carlos Watkins came in as a defensive tackle, was able to start 14 games in year one, got added back to the roster the next year. Jonathan Hankins kind of took his spot, and then when Hankins got hurt, Watkins worked his way back on the field and he kind of flip-flopped between the two there, and just to rattle it off with the draft class as well. So with those free agent moves, you went into the draft and got obviously the best pick of what will likely be the entire Mike McCarthy era, and that's perpetual NFL Defensive Player of the Year candidate Micah Parsons. He was your first round pick, followed by Kelvin Joseph, also Odighizuwa in the third round, who of course is still here and will be counted on even more after a breakout year without Neville Gallimore alongside him. Chauncey Golston is still here, and an interesting player to think about. Mike Zimmer working with Nason Wright, Jabril Cox, Josh Ball, wide receiver Simi Fehoko, defensive tackle Quinton Bohanna, safety Israel McQuamu, another interesting Mike Zimmer guy who still finds his way on this current Cowboys roster. And then your last pick was interior offensive lineman Matt Farniok. So your thoughts overall on the 21 offseason, which again was the first of Dan Quinn?
Well, like you said, the keys in the free agency were bringing in his guys for defense. It is really interesting when you look at the Cowboys' intentions with some of those signings and the way things actually played out. You know, it started with Neil, Kearse, and Kazee, and going into training camp, Kazee and Neil were sort of your first team guys. Kearse was an afterthought. Kearse was a guy that most people thought wouldn't even make the roster. And then as it turned out, he was the best of the bunch. Hooker was added, like, I think training camp had already started when Hooker was signed. Yeah. So, you know, they brought in Hooker at, you know, trying to do an injury rehab sort of project on him. So it really, I mean, they went into it thinking, you know, because he's going to start, Neil is going to be a key. You know, they had Neil tagged for that role, sort of like the hybrid linebacker safety that Kearse ended up being for the last several years. But that was not so. So the things that actually happened with this class were different from what the Cowboys intended, which says something about strategy as far as, oh, things worked out at least. And that's why sometimes the idea of, instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, sign two or three guys who have some experience, who can compete, see what you get. There's something to be said for that strategy. But I mean, they really didn't do anything on the offensive side of the ball that year, but they didn't really need to either. They still had most pieces in place from the previous season. And that worked out fine. Now, the draft gets interesting because Parsons,
but,
man, you talk about saving a draft class. if all you did was get Micah Parsons, you can come away feeling somewhat good about that generational, all time talent. Okay, cool, but it is ugly from there, and the way that they whiffed on both of those Kelvin Joseph and Nason Wright picks, second and third round picks. I mean, just terrible. I mean, that's real. We, you know, Will McClay gets a lot of praise, and rightfully so. But he has definitely had some doozies, too. And Matt Joseph and Wright combo failure on day two of that draft is one of the uglier moments of his time here in Dallas, because Joseph obviously was a total flop, and Wright, he's still here, but he hasn't done anything. I mean, he's still here because there's just no real point in cutting him yet. We'll see if he even makes it onto the roster this year. I kind of doubt it, would be my guess, but because they're not adding a lot of external guys, who knows? Maybe he'll creep on for one more year. But I mean, the draft class is very underwhelming for the most part. Osa, Odighizuwa, I would say that he's been a step up from Gallimore in terms of success as a third round pick at defensive tackle. But I mean, what else have you got?
You know, search for patterns here. It's interesting to see, you know, again, some of the draft picks at positions where you always try to also address free agency. The draft picks ended up at least being slightly better. I mean, Quinton Bohanna was never a great player here, but at least he was on the field more and tried to develop a bit more than, you know, a veteran guy like Carlos Watkins, who had some injury concern, and you know, you kind of knew what you had there, and not a guy you want to see on the field a whole lot, and you know, the same went for Brent Urban, even though he could have played more if not for that injury. So interesting to see some of the patterns at those positions, but you know, at cornerback, especially on where you missed on all your guys in the 2020 class, your saving grace was Trayvon Diggs. Even though you threw two darts in the draft, the next year, try to keep adding to that. Like you say, you need at least three starting caliber ones, and if this year's team is going to be Diggs, Bland, and Lewis at the top of that depth chart, where you got injury concerns with at least two of those guys, which is why it could be good to still have right round, like you say, and also goes ahead and adds cornerback right there to this year's team needs once again. And we're looking for a precedent on how many starters do you quite need. Well, just if we do decide this current roster needs a starting corner, that's probably again pushing it past the amount that they found in a Mike McCarthy draft. If the 2020 class was four, you know, starters or long-term type of players, we could say the 21 class is really only three with Parsons, Odighizuwa, and I would put McQuamu in there just because it is worth noting, you know, that Mike Zimmer can work with another safety like that, and the expectation should be to always give him a chance to be a bigger contributor than we've all seen him be under Dan Quinn. So three starters potentially from the 21 class, but Parsons is easily the saving grace, and you look at everything that didn't work out with guys who are no longer here, like Fajoko and Bahana and Farniok, and that list goes on. You could say that Zimmer and Chauncey Golston working together is interesting, but I mean, I think at this point we know who Chauncey Golston is, and he was drafted probably higher than the type of player that you've gotten out of him to date. So let's move on to the 2022 free agent class. Still all due to Dan Quinn era, of course. But unlike addressing the offense the year before, now you had some needs on offense because the Cowboys kind of refused to, you know, just build up one position group enough where it's, you know, very set and to take over a game for a long period of time. They try to stretch, and this could be a Will McCoy thing too, where we do the unpopular thing and criticize, but in their team building strategy, they try to stretch their talent, you know, almost too thin across the whole roster. They don't have quite that identity to hang their hat on of, you know, this is what we do really well. This is the position group that you just can't game plan against because they're that damn good. They try to spread it around. So if you went very heavy on defense in these last two free agent classes, in 2022 you brought in two wide receivers to try to help this pass game that's needed to jump. T.Y. Hilton on a one-year deal, but he only appeared in three games and, of course, converted that. 3rd and 30 against the Eagles will be his most memorable play late in the fourth quarter on a deep ball. Late on third down, that ended up being a back-and-forth game. The Cowboys ended up winning. In the offseason, you had James Washington. And then defensively, you brought in Anthony Barr, linebacker, on a one-year deal at defensive end. Dante Fowler, who is one of the Quinn guys that followed him to the Commanders.
Yeah, the way that played out with those things, you did have some guys who ended up being useful. Fowler, you know, he ended up having two solid years as a rotation piece. Barr had that year where he contributed in 2022. I think, you know, he wasn't great, but he was enough that we missed last year. I mean, there were times where when things got so bleak, linebacker, we were thinking, man, I wish we still had Anthony Barr. So that's something at least. Even Jason Peters in 2022, he ended up having to play some and was solid. 40-year-old guy. I mean, he was solid in some of the work he did. And, you know, like we've talked about, Cowboys were able to win 12 games, make the playoffs, go send Tom Brady into retirement. I mean, they were able to accomplish some things even with these limited off seasons. So we saw that again. Probably, I mean, you know, the funny thing is that the move I think that we were expecting more from out of all these was James Washington at receiver, because the Cowboys offense through the year has sort of had this thing of taking these nobody guys at receiver or other teams' cast offs like a Laurent Robinson, or the way that a guy like Cedric Wilson blossomed in our offense, just coming sort of out of the late rounds or even undrafted guys at receiver. I thought James Washington, who I believe he was a former second round pick, or at least third round at the most for Pittsburgh. I mean, we figured, oh, well, he's going to really step up, and nothing. You know, it just did not work out. It was not a fit, whatever it was, wasn't good. So That one really wasn't good, but yeah, for the most part, I mean, it was very limited. I mean, they only signed six free agents.
If you want to try to find an, you know, an offseason that tries to give you some hope for this current one, it's definitely this one in terms of trying to follow a similar formula,
yeah.
Small free agent class and big needs to hit on in the draft, and they did so. That's exactly what they're going for this year. But it's an extreme example because you mentioned, you know, six being a low point. Well, now we're sitting here with one, and then we'll talk about the draft in a second and how this is a high water mark of the McCarthy era for finding starters and viable players, and, you know, trying to bank on repeating that isn't a good strategy. But yeah, six outside free agents, some of which definitely helped you. They haven't even come close to that number this year.
And you look at the list of players who left that year. We won't dig into it, but just to reel off names: Amari Cooper, Cedric Wilson, Blake Jarwin, Lael Collins, Connor Williams, Randy Gregory. I mean, they lost a lot of key guys that season too. So,
but still another team that won 12 games. So.
Right. So that parallel that you talked about to this year, 2022, is a good parallel, given the departures versus the additions.
2022 draft class started with offensive lineman out of Tulsa, Tyler Smith, not a popular pick at the time, but he now could be your, once again, starting left tackle. The hope is, of course, that he finds a way to stay at guard, but he's certain to be a high-level player at tackle and guard, and right now, on the current Cowboys roster, left tackle is the bigger need, with Tyron Smith over on the Jets. So he was a first-round pick in 2022. It's, of course, still penned in as a starter on the current team. Sam Williams, defensive end, has a much clearer path to get on the field for the defense now with some of the ends that have moved on to Lenoir Washington. But the defensive line depth overall that's taken a hit this offseason opens the door for Sam Williams to contribute more. I think overall that can be a good thing. Jalen Tolbert climbed the rung on the depth chart, not only while Michael Gallup was still here, really, but now with Gallup departed, Jake Ferguson at tight end, an emerging star, Matt Letzko is a depth option at tackle, Deron Bland at cornerback, Damone Clark, John Ridgeway, defensive tackle, and linebacker Devin Harper.
Yeah, the draft here, and, you know, the closer we get to the present with these draft classes, you sort of have that mix of, there's more hope for some of these guys, and there's more, the jury is still out on some of these guys. So it's harder to say success, failure. Tyler Smith, already big success. And at the very least, we can say that the Cowboys have been killing it with their first round picks since the Taco Charlton disaster. But Tyler Smith just made his first pro team in his second season, you know, sky's the limit there. I think we all agree we'd like him to stay at guard because he seems like Larry Allen Jr., the real Larry Allen Jr., not the other one that we signed 1 year, I think. He seems like that kind of potential. So, amazing pick. Jake Ferguson, I think we've got a dude in Jake Ferguson.
I am those types of dudes, but yes.
Yeah, I just Ferguson is one of my favorite players on the team now, if not my favorite. So get him in the fourth round, amazing. And then, of course, to get Bland in this class as well and what he's done in 2 years. The Cowboys should never draft secondary talent until day three. That's what I've decided. That's when they do their best work.
You can do that and, you know, maximize your upside. Of course, his specialty is in the secondary, and now – a secondary-minded coach, and Al Harris is your assistant head coach. So they definitely put the resources in to, you know, have a star cornerback group, and you can't blame them because elsewhere on the roster they've been gutted, but the cornerback group has stayed pretty strong once you brought back Jordan Lewis.
Yeah, I mean, to get Bland in fifth round, not sixth round, but just still, day three, to get him then, amazing. I think the key to this draft is really going to be what happens now with Sam Williams and Jalen Tolbert in their third seasons. Are we going to be talking about them the way we've talked about Kelvin Joseph and Nashawn Wright, or are they going to step up and start to really contribute and move into larger roles on the team? I wrote about this on Blogging the Boys last week, that they both have incredible opportunities with Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler leaving at end, with Michael Gallup gone at receiver. I mean, they have the opportunity now to become key rotation players, if not pseudo starters for the team. Will they do it? And that will really swing draft class one way or the other in terms of how we view it long term.
So that's as many as 5 starters in this class. I think that's probably pretty close to the number you could talk yourself into the Cowboys needing to come away with this year's draft, starting talent-wise. Certainly left tackle and center, we've been harping on plenty, and then you could add, take your pick of cornerback or linebacker or both, and then, you know, receiver, and then you got kind of your secondary needs. But yeah, if you get close to 5 that are really must-need positions to contribute either right away or close to right away in this year's draft, so good to see a recent precedent of that, and not just that 2021 class, which is, you know, almost ancient history. Yes, your wide receiver 1 and your cornerback 1 are still here, and that's great from those classes, but as far as how that draft came together and everything that was weird about that offseason, I don't think we can read too much into, you know, the process of what their plan was way back then compared to how relevant it is now when you have a class like 2022. Hopefully that inspire some optimism, but we still have the 2023 class to look at, defensive end Ben.
Hey, before we get to 2023, though, we do want to shout out to some of our 2022 undrafted free agents, and that's something we can't ignore in these seasons. And the Cowboys have historically done good work with undrafted free agents, and if you just look at some of the guys they signed in 2022. Marquise Bell, Wanye Thomas, Malik Davis, who may end up having a role this year, remains to be seen. Peyton Hendershot, he's part of your tight end depth chart. And Brandon Aubrey, who, goodness, aren't we so glad they got to know Brandon Aubrey in 2022, because that obviously paid huge dividends the following season. But, you know, shout out to our undrafted free agents as well.
Soccer player out of Notre Dame, obviously. Of course, yes, that was a good pickup. But yeah, I guess excuse me if I'm not all that excited on a Malik Davis or guys like that as far as contributing. The Ferguson and Henderson finally pairing them together healthy could certainly be something, and especially if you're trying to make up for a lackluster tackle group along your offensive line. So that could be something, but we'll see how the offensive line actually shakes out. There's basically no doubt that draft picks in one way or another are coming to that group, whether they find at least one or the ideal 2 starters that you need remains to be seen, but you know, that is where the work needs to be done right now. Let's look at 2023 free agent class. Ben Benogo, defensive end, signed on a 1-year deal, didn't make it to the regular season. Jonathan Hankins came in on a 1-year deal, was brought back. Tack McKinley, 1-year deal, also didn't make it to the season. Long snapper Trent Siege, who was the first move of this current Cowboys offseason, was to bring him back. He started with the team last offseason when he came over from the Raiders, I believe. Offensive tackle Chuma Adoga, still on the market. He was on a 1-year deal, started 6 games, filling in for Tyron Smith, as we know, and the running back Ronald Jones. 1-year deal, got served the 2 game suspension, though, and then as soon as that suspension was over, he was released from the team. He's probably one of the most forgotten about free agents in NFL history, but that was your 2023 class, which then led to the 2023 draft class. Defensive tackle Mazi Smith, tight end Luke Shoemaker, linebacker Demarion Overshown, Junior Fajoko, defensive lineman who really took, you know, the full definition of a redshirt year, being stacked behind a lot of defensive line depth like Dan Quinn and compiled. So now Mike Zimmer gets his hands in a much clearer picture on Fajoko. What could that mean for his development? Asim Richards, offensive tackle lineman out of North Carolina, cornerback Eric Scott, you traded up in the 6th round to get him, so it was seeming like Quinn liked him a lot, but he's a lengthy corner that could play in man coverage. There's no reason to think that Zimmer doesn't like him as well, and we should consider Scott in our offseason plans and defensive plans. Deuce Vaughn, the running back, and then Zaylen Brooks, wide receiver, a guy that I like quite a bit and is going to get a shot here as well. Gives you some hope that the 23 class can have a better year. They certainly, didn't make the immediate impact on this season that you needed. That's why this team had some fatal flaws. We very well could see the same out of the 24 class.
And this is your offseason that you have some of those parallels, because like you mentioned, the free agent signings were next to nothing. And then you had a big exodus of talent I mean, this is the offseason that Ezekiel Elliott goes somewhere. Dalton Schultz leaves. You lose Connor McGovern as a starting offensive lineman. And you lost Anthony Brown and some other guys who were big parts of your rotations at times. So, yeah, some more where it felt like in the offseason there were more exits than additions, which can get you a little scared. This was, of course, the offseason, like we mentioned before, that they did do those trades for Cooks and for Gilmore. So there was also that trade for Trey Lance, which we're still trying to figure out what the heck that was all about and maybe what's going to happen with Dak Prescott will make that make more sense. But the draft here, at least, this is truly a jury still out situation. Even on Mozzie, you know, that I think that we're all getting a little nervous based on that rookie year. And that's not fair because we're not going to always have guys who come in like Lamb, like Parsons, like Tyler Smith, who just knock it out of the park, hit the ground running. So if Mozzie needs a year to figure things out, and especially now that he's got a new defensive coordinator, he may need a second year to start to contribute really consistently. Schoonmaker, I've been hating on that pick for a year, and only because I had faith in Jake Ferguson before the 2023 draft, and I felt like he was the guy. So spending a second round pick on who's going to end up being a backup tight end for the next few years, that still annoys me. Again, Schoonmaker, I just felt like it was really poor use of a pick, and it just reminded me of all these times that we've seen Dallas draft a Martellus Bennett or Anthony Fasano or Gavin Escobar, and it was like, why? You're not going to throw to them. You got Jason Witten. And I feel like that's kind of where we may be headed with that pick again. What I'm really interested in, you mentioned Fehoko, both for him and for Chauncey Golston. They're two guys I'm really curious to see if Mike Zimmer helps them to really blossom, because I think that Quinn was converting them almost to interior three technique tackles at times, and Zimmer's going to play more of a traditional, not so much small ball style. And so if these guys can go back to being actual defensive ends, which is what they did in college and stuff, that might help them. So that Zimmer's arrival could really help those guys to become what you thought they would be in the draft.
Well, like we touched on last week, the part of the hope for if you're going to have any this offseason, and that's few and far between for taking the temperature of Cowboys Nation right now, is that Mike Zimmer can be more of that, like I said, secret sauce of what this team is banking on between the year away from football to potentially give some opposing teams confusion on what they have to prepare for, the guys he's going to get to work with, not only from past classes but established talent on the roster, plus what they're about to bring in, although all signs point to a more offensive draft early on, that could be something that we try to look for in Zimmer. But like you've pointed out, we've tried to say the same about Mike Nolan. That was an epic failure. And we said the same about Quinn. And yes, there were high points in the Quinn tenure, but he never quite elevated the Cowboys defense to where they were, single-handedly the reason you were winning games. They did in complement of an offense that had a Pro Bowl level quarterback in Dak Prescott. But how much can you continue to ask Prescott to elevate, and has that been a winning formula in the postseason? It certainly has not, and this could be the best example of Prescott's whole career of just how much he has to elevate depending on how these immediate draft picks are going to work out. So there's our exercise in trying to see if this Cowboys offseason has really been quite different, or how surprising should we take it, or is there precedent for how they can still somehow find a way to win 12 games? Jess, what are your thoughts overall on the patterns that we found and what they've done, and certainly only having one external free agent at this point is an outlier. Going to the draft with this many needs isn't necessarily an outlier. The 2022 class gives you that hope of finding your guys, but did you find Bland because Quinn was here, and can you expect the same under Zimmer? Is Jalen Tolbert actually going to be the player we now think he can be in replacing or helping to replace Michael Gallup? There's still big question marks around that class being as good as we kind of painted a picture of it being. And even, when we talked about the 2020 class, we know that CeeDee Lamb is a well-established wide receiver one at this point, but it's not like he immediately came out of the gate and was as good as he is now. So that's the type of thing the Cowboys are banking on this year that we didn't see in previous years. So that justifies some of the doom and gloom we've seen around the fan base, but also adds context to, you know, yes, they've had slow free agencies followed by at least winning regular seasons before.
Yeah, the patterns that we've seen with this is I think going back to what we said at the beginning, that because you have two guys who are perennial, especially like last year we saw with Dak Prescott, an MVP candidate, offensive player of the year type stuff. And then, of course, Micah Parsons on the defensive side. Because you have those two guys on each side of the ball, you can do a lot. They can help to make things better. They can help to keep the team as a regular season contender. And that's what we've seen for the last 3 years, which, of course, is when Parsons joined the team and when Dak Prescott stopped having major injuries. The last 3 years, 12 win seasons, beating up on a bad team in the playoffs like they did with, not a bad team, but, you know, definitely not a great Tampa Bay team that they've beaten up on coming out of the NFC South, which I think you or I could do at some point. So that's what they've got. That's the formula that they've had. So, yeah, these off seasons with minimal additions through free agency and so on, they've been able to tread water and keep doing that. But the problem is that the minute they go up against a San Francisco or a team like that, they get embarrassed. And not just San Francisco. We saw them get embarrassed against Miami and Buffalo late last season too. So it's just the formula is not working. And that's why when you're hearing this stuff this offseason about the Cowboys potentially really blowing it up, I think that's why, because the way that the team is currently constructed only accomplishes so much. And so I think that even though this year we're seeing sort of the pattern continue of how they've handled their past off seasons, it's being taken to a whole nother extreme because you have not seen them move money around on Dak Prescott's contract. So if they're not going to do that, that speaks to an even bigger change that could be coming.
Well said. As the official keeper of the Dayton Triangles, I will say I did get word from Kitten that it is okay if we skip Triangle of Triumph this week, that it'll be on pause until next week, and all is well in the world of keeping the legacy of the Dayton Triangles alive here on Hidden Yardage, which is something we take very seriously. So Triangle Triumph will be back next week, as will Jess Haney, and we'll have a new episode of Hidden Yardage for you right here on the Blogging the Boys podcast network with Saul Martin and Jess Haney. You can follow me at Saul Martin NFL and Jess is at Cowboys Addicts. Give us a shout on X. Let us know what you think of our offseason review and trip down memory lane that was in the Mike McCarthy era that's now coming into a contract year in 2024 and coming into one where the draft is going to be oh so important, and we'll start talking about that soon in the coming weeks as well. And there it is.